My little brother would get haircuts for me, then go to the barbershop and pay a couple of pounds to fix it up. So it was his kind of like, he's not scam, but he's kind of like, you know, I'll get a haircut for me. It's not great. They'll go there. They'll just fix up the fade and shape him up. And he's paying really like £2 for the shape up. Then they'll charge him like a pound just to fix up the haircut.
My first salon that I opened up when I was like 22, I walked past a fantastic shop every single morning, Arches in Lavender Hill.
Yeah.
Brilliant store. I'd go past at like 9 when I was opening my shop up. It was heaving already. And then we'd finish at 6 and I'd walk back past. It was still heaving. And all I ever thought was, man, I wish I could get my shop that busy. You know, the kind of black barbershop has had that proper fix in the community. It's a destination, it's a place. And it seems to have kept that.
Like, you ask people, who's your customer? And they don't know. And it's like, why don't you know that? I want to be one of the barbershops. We cut everyone. You can be, but do you specialize in everyone?
Yeah.
So don't tell me you cut everyone. I'm like, oh, you cut Afro hair. I'm not good at that. So you don't cut everyone. Unless you're going to find barbers where it's going to be like, okay, we've got a barber who's really good at Afro hair, European hair, this and that. If that's the case, and that is a business model, right? Because you can cut everyone, but it doesn't mean you cut everyone good.
Hi, welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. I'm Anthony Laband, and we'll be talking to various people in the industry who've made it and their journey and how they got here. Talking honest, cutting through the crap, and making sure your story and their story is heard to help your business and hopefully mine. If you haven't already, please hit the subscribe button, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Hi there, I'm Anthony Laband, and welcome to another episode of the Noble Barber Podcast. I'm here today with Mark McIver, Slider Cuts. Mark, thank you so much. Really appreciate you coming over. I've wanted to talk to you for ages, and we're just coming up to a year of this podcast, and so pleased to have got you on, and appreciate you coming southwest to come and talk to us. Hell of a journey.
All good.
So really, if you could just give us a little précis of how you got from, you know, how you became Slider Cuts, I guess.
Okay, well, a little brief, keep it very short. It started when I was about 13, 14. I started cutting my own hair because I was getting haircuts from my older brothers and my mum, and they just weren't really good haircuts.
Yeah.
And I went to a school where everybody had good haircuts now. They had fades, they had lines, they had shape-ups and so on. So I just wanted one of those haircuts. So because we couldn't afford to go to the barbershop, I just thought the only way this can happen is if I do it myself. That's what made me pick up the clippers originally. But, you know, after the first haircut went wrong and I had to cut all my hair off, and then I got suspended from classes because my hair was too short. Next time I needed a haircut, we still didn't have no money, so I cut my hair again. Didn't go well, same thing, all off. But we still didn't have no money, and I just was persistent on the idea of, I'm going to get this right, you know, I'm going to get a fade, and I'm going to have a shape up, and I was really into it. So over a period of time, slowly I started getting better. So I started doing my little cousin who started living with me. Then I started doing my little brother every now and then. My little brother would get haircuts for me, then go to the barbershop and pay a couple of pounds to fix it up. So it was his kind of like, he's not scam, but he's kind of like, you know, I'll get a haircut for me. It's not great. They'll go there. They'll just fix up the fade and shape him up. And he's paying really like £2 for the shape up. Then they'll charge him like a pound just to fix up the haircut.
Yeah.
You know, then suddenly I started cutting, you know, some guy who lives in my area, and then a few people from my area. So over a few years, my client list just started growing, and it wasn't even anything I was planning. I wasn't planning to build a career out of it, but I was enjoying cutting hair. So when I was 18, I got a job in a shop in Holloway called D&L's. And that just came about through, you could say, fortune and luck, because my little brother was saying I was better than one of the barbers in that shop. So as a joke, when I saw the manager on the street, I was just like, oh, I'm better than your barber, just as a joke, right? And he was just like, all right, cool, you know, come and take his place. You know, and I thought he was telling me to take his place, but he was actually just winding me up because he thought, you're saying all of this, you've got the big mouth, you know, all right, cool, you know, put your money where your mouth is, come and take his place then. And I was just like, oh, I was joking, you know, no. But then every time he saw me after that, he's like, you know, so when you come into work here, because basically there was a space in the shop. So I wasn't there literally to take his place, but there was a space there. Really? After a few months, I eventually just said, okay, yeah. You know, I thought the pressure's on, and you know what? The only reason why I was saying no as well was because I was thinking, if I cut a real client and I mess them up, it's going to be a problem. But then I thought, because they keep asking me, I thought, when I mess someone up, it's you guys' fault because you keep asking me, innit? So that's how I got into it. And then, you know, the name Slider Cuts came from my nickname being Slider when I was an MC, when I was like 14 years old. That was my nickname. So everybody referred to me as Slider, to the point where Slider was just my name now. So when I was setting up a website for myself in 2010, I was about 23, 24, something like that. I was like, what am I going to call it? So I thought because everyone referred to me as Slider, I'll call it like, you know, Barber Slider, Slider Barber, SliderTheBarber.com, you know, what, something around Slider, right? And my wife, who was my girlfriend at the time, and my older brother suggested Slider Cuts. I did Slider Cuts. So that's where the name came from. So now from that point there, everything that came out, like Facebook, or not Facebook, originally Facebook was just your name. When Instagram came out, whether it's Twitter or Snapchat, whatever it was, Slider Cuts was the name. So that's where the name actually came from. And, you know, working in that barbershop is where I kind of built up my craft of becoming a good barber and so on, because I worked there for like 16 years. And for about 10, 11 years of that time, I was managing the shop as well. So, you know, I got into the management and running of a shop and so on, which gave me training into what it was like to run a shop, so that when I opened up my own shop, I had kind of a basic foundation of some of the basic things that needed to be done. And that's kind of like the brief of how I got into it and how it came to this.
Cool. You're very good at putting the name out there, though, man. I love how Slider Cuts goes on everything. Well done. Yeah. Well, I think one of the things that always kind of got me when I started looking at the kind of hit list for people to come on the podcast with you was the kind of way you approach your work. Mm. And certainly recently chatting to an awful lot of young barbers coming in, there's this idea of, I'll come in and do a £400 haircut on a celebrity and then go home for the day. I'll swan around. It's a really easy gig. And you're a hardworking fella, man. I mean, you're in your store at the crack of dawn.
Yeah.
And you have the celebrity clients. So, you know, obviously, you know, AJ didn't have such a great weekend, but, you know, you've been cutting Anthony Joshua's hair and, you know, hey, Storms, the list goes on.
Yeah.
You know, so you are that celebrity barber. You own a barbershop and you're getting yourself behind the chair at 5 a.m.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's work, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that, you know, if people are getting into this industry because they're thinking, you know, I'm gonna do two haircuts, three haircuts a day, you know, at £200 to £300 or £400 a haircut, you know, easy work, you're probably in the wrong industry. Because there are people which are doing that, right? But they're the anomalies. And sometimes I think we look at the anomalies and say, that's gonna be my life. And you could be one of them, right? But where there's thousands or tens of thousands of barbers, it's really like slim for you to be that person. And I know some people might think, you know, well, I'm being negative. It's not being negative, it's just letting you know they are the anomalies, you know. There's, you know, there's one fastest person in the world. You know, if there's 1,000 people or 10,000, 100,000 people going for that position, you got to understand there is only one person that's doing that. So I think, you know, when you look at an industry you're going into, you need to look at kind of generally what's happening, you know, because you could be the anomaly, but you are more likely to be the average person.
Yeah.
You know, and also I think people think that, oh, you know, celebrities just pay the most money, and that's not really the case. You know, they're not there, you know, just stupid and saying, you know, cool, I'll pay £400, I'll pay £500, you know. Some might, you know, but you might be surprised to realize that, you know, there are celebrities out there who don't even want to pay the real price.
Mm.
You know, you know, there's celebrities out there
cursed with the freebie culture.
You know, they want a discounted price. You know, maybe they want a free haircut. You know, these are the things which I think people don't see because nobody talks about it. You know, that, you know, I've cut people in the past, you know, I would never mention names, but, you know, celebrities who they don't want to pay the full price.
Yeah, no, and I'm sure that's proper. That's it. There is that kind of, I'm the celebrity, you're lucky to be, yeah.
Yeah, you know.
And I think that's the reality of it. But, you know, you've still got a passion. You've still got the energy and the enthusiasm to be behind the chair.
Yeah.
And I think that's the message that young barbers need to get their head around, that although it is graft, it's enjoyable.
It's enjoyable if you find it enjoyable. If you don't like the industry you're in, because there are people out there who don't like cutting hair, which is fine. You know, it's a job. At the end of the day, you don't have to enjoy your job, right? If you enjoy it, it's amazing. Mm. If you don't, then, you know, it's a job, you know. It pays your bills, right? But I feel like if you do enjoy it, it does make it a little bit easier. Doesn't mean it's going to be easy because, you know, just because I enjoy cutting hair doesn't mean that it's easy to work from 5 a.m. till, you know, 8 p.m. or 9 p.m. at night. It's, you know, but that's the work side of it, you know. And I think it's important for people to understand that, you know, when I'm doing that, it's not because I love it so much. I'm doing it because I have responsibilities. And I have such a, how can I say, I've got such a client list of people who are bothering me for haircuts. I've had to stretch out my hours to fit everybody in. And that's where it all started from, because people say things sometimes like, you know, well, yeah, you know, you're making money. And yes, I am making money from it, you know, but that's not the reason as to why I started stretching out my times. It wasn't actually to make money initially. It was actually just because I was starting at 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock originally. This is, we're talking about like, maybe 15 years ago. And then someone's like, oh, I need a haircut, but I'm fully booked, as example. And it's like, okay, cool, I'll come in at 9:30. Then it's like, you know, someone else, oh, I'll come in at 9 o'clock. Then someone else is kind of like, oh, I'll come in at 8:30. Then suddenly I'm starting at 5 o'clock because I'm like, I'm trying to get everybody in. And that's where it all started. And also my thing was, I would rather work early than work late. Although sometimes you might think to yourself, well, you know, you're working till 8 or 9, right? But generally I'd always push people to come earlier because my thing is nothing happens in the morning. Yeah. But things happen in the evening. So you miss out on life when you're working late. People's birthdays, gatherings, social events, and so on. So I'd rather be like, okay, I work from 5 a.m. Then I can, at least I can get out there by 6 or 7. And then I can go to that person's birthday and so on. And also I got to understand, even my schedule, like Saturdays, I finish around 12. But the reason why I finish around 12 is so that I can go home and I can be with my children and my wife. You know, I can take my children to the birthday parties. I can be with them and so on. So I have a balanced life. The thing that's not balanced in my life is sleep. But, you know, but my children don't notice I'm not there. Like this morning, I've woken up, got them dressed, brushed their own teeth. I've fed them, well, they feed themselves, except for my daughter, who's 1 and a half. You know, made their food, dropped them both at school because they go to two different schools. You know, then I've come here. Then I'll be back to pick them up from school, take them home, feed them, all that kind of stuff there. So they don't notice, you know, tomorrow will be the same thing. On Wednesday, I might work in the morning, but then I'll pick them up from school, same thing. Thursday, Friday, no, I won't be with them. But Saturday, I'll be there with them. Sunday, I'll be with them. So they don't notice it. The thing that's really sacrificed is sleep, you know, because I'm not sleeping as much as I should, right? But I'm doing that so that I can make sure that I'm around with my family and I can work the hours I need to work as well now to bring in the money that I need to bring in to provide and, you know, and pay for the bills and so on and the lifestyle which we're living. So yeah, it is hard work and it's a grind and it's not as simple as just wake up in the morning and cut, you know, do a 400-pound cut and a 600-pound cut and, you know, do about 3 hours and call it a day.
But that's why, you know, I have conversations with lots that have kind of said exactly that. I want this work-life balance and, you know, and I think, you know, kind of the Insta world kind of portrays that they're having this brilliant life.
Yeah.
And actually, there is always a sacrifice, whether it is, you know, working late and not seeing your kids grow up or whether you're just not getting to sleep and grabbing what you can. Yeah, there is, it's work. And I think as glamorous as doing some celebrities, doing a show, being this, doing that, the reality is that, you know, you've built your name and your career because you've worked at your craft. Your customer base and your celebrities are only coming to you because of your quality.
Yeah.
Not just because, you know, you got a pretty name on the front of your shop. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, celebrities.
You know, it's the graft. You got to be, you know, you got to know what you're doing that people trust you.
Yeah.
No, I think that's really interesting. And the other bit, like I said to you just beforehand, you know, we've seen a rebirth of kind of like European barbershops or what we seeming to be calling a kind of modern barber.
Yeah.
And we're now 10 years in and we're starting to see companies that are trying to kind of build their culture, build their community. And as I said to you, my first salon that I opened up when I was like 22, I walked past a fantastic shop every single morning, Arches in Lavender Hill.
Yeah.
Brilliant store. I'd go past at like 9 when I was opening my shop up. It was heaving already. And then we'd finish at 6 and I'd walk back past. It was still heaving. And all I ever thought was, man, I wish I could get my shop that busy. But, you know, that, you know, the kind of black barbershop has had that proper fix in the community. It's a destination. It's a place. And it seems to have kept that. Even as, you know, as like your shop, a very modern barbers that caters across, you know, European hair as well.
Yeah.
It still has that firm community spirit and kind of culture that the modern European barber doesn't seem to have got. Did you grow up seeing that in barbershops and that kind of cultural part of the barbershop for you?
Yeah, yes and no. I didn't go to barbershops as a kid because we couldn't afford to.
Sure.
So the first time I went to a barbershop, I was maybe 14, 15. And I went in there with my friend who was getting his haircut. So I remember that was the first time I went into there. And then after that, to be honest, I started going quite a bit because my friend's older brother was working in a shop. So after school, sometimes on Saturdays, we were able to go in there and just chill in there because his older brother was working there. So I got that experience there. But also it was from shows like Desmond's, which is an old show, you know, they used to come on and things you just see all like random episodes on like a show like maybe Hang Time, which is an old show which people will not know, you know, but you might just see a random episode where they're in a barbershop, you know. So that was kind of my experience growing up. But I remember just being in a barbershop and just seeing everyone you kind of like know or know of coming into the shop from your area. And it's kind of like, there's that guy who's the notorious guy and he walks into the shop, you know. And there's, you know, the guy that does this and there's that, back then it was like, you know, there's that MC or there's that DJ. Because I don't know if you know Heartless Crew.
Yeah, yeah.
So the first shop I ever went to was a shop called Positive Move. And they were in Archway. And Fonty, the DJ from Heartless Crew, was one of the barbers.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was one of the barbers in the shop. So, you know, I remember getting a haircut from him and just being like, feeling like, Fonty's cutting my hair. DJ, you know, DJ Fonty is cutting my hair, you know, because even then he used to hand out his tapes and stuff like that in the shop. But it was just like, because basically what it was in a black barbershop, which it was before, and it still kind of is now, is you could see anyone in the shop because maybe more now there's becoming a bit more of a selection of shops, right? But especially back in the days, it was like the barbershop was the barbershop. So you go to the barbershop and like back then, you know, I remember the shop which I was working in, which my friend's older brother used to work in. I remember being there and Richard Blackwood walking in.
Yeah.
You know, because there was no hierarchy. There was no kind of like, there is that special black barbershop. It was just like, you went to a shop where you got a good haircut, you know. So Fonty could be cutting your hair. Richard Blackwood could walk in, you know, whoever it was, right? So it was just that kind of like hub in the community, you know, where it's just like, you could meet anyone. And it's still some degree like that now, you know. I try to make my shop still like that now, where Stormzy walks into the barbershop still, comes and gets his haircuts, you know. Yeah. People will be like, you know, and they're surprised because they're like, you know, and sometimes it's like, that can't be Stormzy, you know, because why would Stormzy be just walking
yeah,
in?
Yeah.
You know, why would Anthony Joshua just be walking in to the barbershop, you know? But it is that, and I think it's because black people traditionally haven't had in this country a place where it was kind of like they're almost like their members club,
yeah.
You know, where you find other communities have it. Like, you know, let's say like Turkish community, they have like their snooker halls. Like if you go places like Turnpike Lane and, you know, even Stoke Newington, some of the places there, you'll see that they got their snooker halls. And when you look in there, you know, they're not saying only Turkish people, but you see a bunch of Turkish people in there.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, this is their hangout, you know, white, let's say working class people, you know, the pub has always been their thing. And it's not exclusive. It's not like someone black can't walk into that. But what I like about these spaces are, and why I'm one of the believers of like these spaces not being changed, because I believe that if I walk into a pub on a Friday night, they shouldn't be catering to me. I should be coming there to adapt to the culture I'm going into.
Right. Oh, you know, okay. Yeah, yeah.
That's the way I see it. You know, I shouldn't be going in there saying, you know, well, I don't listen to this music and I don't watch that. You know, oh, I don't drink alcohol. It's like, well, what are you doing in a pub?
Yeah.
They should be checking it for me, because I feel like culture, I'm a big fan of culture, and I'm not liking the era we're in where people want to change the culture to adapt to them. And I'm just like, no, when I walk into a pub, I know what a pub's about. So I walk into it. I can't walk into a pub and say it's too loud in here.
Yeah, no.
You know, I go in there because I know I'm coming to adapt to that culture. You know, I can't walk into the pub and say I don't like the food and I don't want fish and chips, or I don't want a pie and mash. I don't want none of those things there. You know, I want jerk chicken. It's like, no, I've gone into a pub.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why I see the black barbershop, where it's like, it's not exclusive to black people, but when you walk in there, you're getting more of a culturally black environment and you should come in there to adapt to that, or just, you know, accept it, the music that's being played, what's on TV, you know, the conversations, the things which you're talking about, you know, come in, you know, you're not kind of like excluded from it, but you're not here to change it.
Yeah, immerse in it. Yeah. No. And I mean, I think when I, like I say, my love of Arches as I walk past every morning was the fact that you saw all the barbers there, and they're kind of, because of everyone coming in for them, there is an element of kind of celebrity in their own right. You know what I mean? That's that. And now we're seeing it with certainly European barbers that you are a part of the community.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a really important part of it.
Yeah. I think just simple things. Just get to know your clients, know their names, know what they do, you know their relationship status. Do they have children? What job? You know, some of the kids which come in there, you know, you see their uniforms, you know what school they're going to. What are you finishing school? You starting your GCSEs? I think it just comes from just knowing your clients.
Because
once you know your clients, it organically will happen because you build a relationship with them. So now it'll be like, oh, you know, how did your exams go? You ask the boy, how did your exams go? oh, it went well. Oh, it didn't go well. You know that, you know? Yeah. Okay, then you start talking to them. Okay, well, it didn't go well. So what's your plans now? And it's having a genuine interest in them. And you can be like, oh, you know what? I know someone actually. You could actually join this course and you can get your access and you could still do that thing if you want to. And I just feel like when you once you have a genuine interest in your clients, that community just builds.
Yeah, no, it's a really vital part of it. And I think you do that. You know, as I said to you previously, your Instagram is one of the few that I quite enjoy watching.
Yeah.
Because you're really blunt about the fact that there's more to the job than just standing there cutting hair. I think you've said somewhere I've picked up, I'm very bad at my research.
No
sorry, but you know, you said somewhere that you know you wanted to do an academy and your academy needed to be more business based,
yeah,
and that
yeah.
You know, you were disappointed that so many young barbers are coming through with no idea about tax and rent and the actual kind of mechanics of being a business.
Yeah, people don't understand those things there, and so much barbers come out of these courses and they say to me, I've gone to this bar, can I ask you advice, please? I'm like, okay, sure. They're like, I've gone to this barbershop and they're saying that I should pay this much rent. Or they're saying they're going to take 50% or 60% or 40% off me. Is that right? Should they be taking that much money off me? Or, you know, they said that actually they want to pay me, but this much, or they want to... And all these things then, I'm just like, wouldn't it be good if when you were doing the barber course, they even just done one session, just talking briefly about, you know, when you leave here, you know, go find a shop. Now, these are the different deals you can get. You can get paid wages. They might do a percentage split. They might charge you a rent, you know which one you want, you know, this and that. Just, I don't think it has to be even like overbearing. It could be one session, just like, I just think to myself, how can you have no clue what to expect? Just, okay, you got a qualification and they're like, oh, you know, how do I go find a job now? You know, and I'm just thinking to myself, wouldn't this be great just to know that already?
Well, yeah, I mean, I've spoken to a few, I've now spoken to, you know, to people that are running college courses, yeah. Private schools that are charging for a course, and then you know apprentices. You run apprentices as well with yours, don't you?
Yeah, we do basic
like
apprenticeship
on the job training.
Yeah,
And it does feel like a lot of them just come out of these courses with this idea of right, I'm done now, I'm ready, I'm ready to go.
Yeah,
with no concept of actually how the rest of it works, what to do next. They pay their, you know, certainly with the privates, they're paying £5,000-£7,000 to do a 3-month course,
yeah.
And they're coming out with kind of a good knowledge of the basics, or they're doing a 9-month college course, which is debatable how well the basics are after that.
Yeah.
But not quite sure really what happens next. And there seems like there's a lot of young people who've done that element of the training that just don't know what to do next, and a lot of barbershops that don't know what to do with them. Do you encounter many of those?
Yeah, because now it's like these barbers have got these qualifications and they come and it's kind of like, I don't know, they're thinking that they should be getting paid this, or they just, you know, they just seen Instagram and people talking about know your value, know your worth and all these things there. And it's like, no, I always tell people, start from the basics. I say, first of all, find, this is my key advice to everybody who's just starting. Find a barbershop where there's good barbers. That's the most important thing, first of all. Find a shop that is local to you to some degree, or it's easy to get to for you, wherever that will be, you know, the closest good barbershop to you, find that shop there. Go into the shop and speak to the owner or the manager and say, I'd like to, you know, to get a job. They're likely, if it's a really good barbershop, we'll have no spaces. So what you should say to them is, don't go there talking about what do I get, offer your services. Well, there's no spaces, but I'd love to be around, you know, you guys, you're good barbers. I'd love to be able to just take in the environment and soak up everything that's going on in here. So could I just, you know, watch you guys and I'll sweep up, I'll take out the bins, I'll wash hair for you. If you need me to wash hair for you, I can go buy products for you, you know, because what people don't realize is you want to be around good barbers, but what you don't understand is those good barbers are probably booked up barbers. They have no time for you. So what you need to do is make yourself valuable to them.
Yeah.
And what you'll find is the more you make yourself valuable and the more helpful you are to those people there, the more they'll be willing to actually go above and beyond to help you. I'll give people an example. There's a barber who works in my shop now, Courtney. He's now just got a full-time job. Gave him a job. It's been like 2 months now, right? He just finally just got a full-time job, right? A few years ago, he came and said, you know, I want to be a barber. He is like 30, I don't know, early 30s now, right? So at this time when he wants to be a barber, he's got 2 children. He's married. And I'm just like, it's a hard time to switch careers right now, you know? And he's like, yeah, I just want, I feel like I want to come into it, you know, but cool, you know, is it cool if I come and just watch you guys? I said, cool, come. He says, like, on Saturdays, I'll come. I'll just watch you guys. He came every Saturday, or most Saturdays, he'd sweep up. This is a guy who's in his late 20s right now, right? So you'd think to yourself, at that age there, it'd be feel a little bit like hurting your pride.
I should be more than this, yeah.
And we had no spaces for him. No job for him. Kept on coming for about a year. Watching, asking questions, sweeping up. Would ask us, oh, do you guys want anything from the shop? Or you guys, you hungry? I'll go to the shop. I'll go get you food if you want to. Just helping out, right? After a year, I was like, you know what? I really want to find something for this guy.
Yeah.
I want to find a space for him. Like, you know, so I said to him, you know what? On Saturdays, start coming in, you know, I can't remember if it was a year or just under a year, but you know, it was around that time anyway. I said, start coming in. If you can get customers in, like, we'll help you with a haircut. So get some of your friends, family, whoever it is in, you know. So he started doing that. And then I was like, okay, cool. You know, still helping out as well, still sweeping up all those things there. I was like, okay, cool. You know what? I'm going to put you on the books now. So, you know, I'm going to put you on the booking system as free haircuts so people can book you. So he started getting booked up, free haircuts, an apprentice, you know, working on a Saturday. Then he was like, you know, in his job, he gets to finish early or something like that, or on a Thursday. So then he started working Thursday afternoons, you know, just doing free haircuts. After that, it was like, okay, cool. You know, you've developed a little bit. We can start charging for your haircuts, you know, as a junior barber. So I became a junior barber, still hasn't really got a full job here. And I was like, okay, you know, you're getting paid. We're just going to do you. No, as an apprentice, we started charging like £3, I think. I started saying, after a free period, I was like, okay, let's just charge like £3 to £5, you know, little money. And I let him keep all the money. I'm like, you know, because I was like, you know, you've been grinding it out, right? Yeah. It's been a couple of years now. You're grinding it out. And then 2 months ago, so we're in September.
Yeah.
So 2 months ago, maybe like beginning of summer or something like that, right? I was like, Tim, okay, you know what? I'm going to give you a full-time job. You know, space to come available as well. I'm going to give you a full-time job and I'm going to pay you. I just said to him, how much do you need to live? Because I said, right now we're in a stage where it'd be a good time for you to switch over. And to be honest, I said to him, I remember the voice note I sent to him, right? Which I was like, I sent him a voice note saying, look, I don't know how I'm going to do this, right? But I'm just going to pay you. What do you need? He said the amount he needs to live. I said, work out what you need exactly to pay all your bills and everything like that. Especially you just had another child as well. So he said, third. I said, you know, he gave me the amount. I said, all right, cool. I'm going to pay you that every month, right? Until you can build up a time when we can get to a place where we can do a percentage split, right? You know, I said, I don't know how I'm going to do it. I'm being very honest with you. I don't know how I'm going to do this or, you know, find the money. But don't worry about that. I'm just going to pay you, you know, this money that you need to live every month, right? And it's been about 2 months now. He's been working out. He's working there full time. He's improved dramatically in these 2 months. Because I said to him, what you need is you need to be on this full time. The gaps aren't good for you. Yeah. You just need to be on it full time. And now he's got a full time job, right? And he's cutting, he's probably like 70% booked up, right? A lot of the times. And he's just building up his craft, you know, and I can see that in the next year, he's going to be in a stage where we'll probably switch over to percentage split. And then he'll be earning good money as well for his family. But the reason why I tell this story is because this is a guy who's in his late 20s with 2 children and that time switched over to having 3 children, right? And just went and just offered his services to the point where I felt like I really wanted to help him out because you're just helping, you're just coming in humbly every week, sweeping up, offering us stuff. I can go get you this if you want, guys want to. Just grinding it out, right? So that's the person who's in his late 20s who need money, who's working another full-time job, you know, and in his spare time is coming. Sometimes he came with his one of his children, you know, to the shop, right? Just because he's like trying to make it happen. So if he can do that, married, children, working a full-time job, when you're 17, 18, 19, you know, and potentially living at home with your parents or guardian or whoever it is, right, paying no bills, that's the time to be like that.
Yeah. Really show that commitment. That's show that phenomenal. Commitment
to the
yeah.
Show that commitment to the shop.
Yeah.
Help them out. Like, make yourself valuable. Make yourself someone where they're like, okay, right, he really's helping us out. Because what you'll find is when you become that person, you'll just start seeing barbers be like, you know what? Let's say a space comes available. You start cutting hair. You start seeing barbers being like, let me help you out. Come on, come. Let me show you something. Let me show you a technique. Come here. Let me show you a technique. Let me show you this. Let me go over this haircut for you because you've been so helpful to them. You know, people just want everything to be given to them, right? And don't realize.
But that's, I mean, he's found himself, you know, he made himself valuable.
Made himself valuable.
You know, made himself someone that if he wasn't there one Saturday, everyone's kind of like, oh, I'll go and get my own sandwich. Where's he gone?
Yeah.
No, I think that's, I mean, you said it, you know, a minute ago, you were just saying, you know, everyone's being told to know your worth and
your value.
And actually your value is
in what you offer.
In what you're offering. You know, it's not a matter of I'm here for you to give me this knowledge.
Yeah, you know,
I think the industry really wants people like that to come in. You know, I think with I own salons and barbershops.
Yeah.
And as a salon and barbershop owner yourself, you get this kind of stigma that, oh, they're after, yeah, they're just going to rip us off.
Yeah.
And I've not met one barbershop owner that's doing that. All of them really want people to come in, work hard, do well, and reward them. You know, we want to reward our barbers for working hard.
Definitely.
You know, no one's going to be able to reward you for coming in, doing two haircuts in the back, and then sitting on the around the back on your phone, updating your dating app or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Which is surprisingly, the amount of barbershops I walk past that you see guys sitting in their chair, ignoring the outside world, flicking through three hours of scrolling on their, on other people's Instagram.
Yeah, and they just don't realize the work that goes in. And so many barbershops, I walk past so many barbershops, and I always say I'm fortunate because I walk past so many barbershops, especially that I live in Hackney, and just walk around and they're just empty.
Yeah.
And just empty. And this is why I say to people, if you live in one of these areas and you find a good barbershop, remember, you can be, go and offer your services to an empty barbershop. No offense to the empty barbershops, you know, but you're not going to get anything from it. Gain anything from it.
Yeah.
So when you're going to a barbershop that's going to give you value and going to help you out, offer your services. Do look at where you can help out, because you want to be around these good barbers, these busy, bubbling barbers. You know, some of them might just be great barbers. Some of them might be great at marketing and they got good things going on social media, but they just so much things to learn from a shop like
going
that. Don't go there believing that they're there to give you something. Go there with a mindset of, okay, I'm here to give you something. And what can I do? Because you can evidently see what you can get from these guys already, you know, or you can go to a shop, as I said, which is empty and be like, okay. And they will say to you, yeah, come in. You can work here. But what they're going to expect from you is go and find some customers.
I mean, that's the bit, you know, a lot of guys that are wanting, oh, I'm self-employed, I want self-employed. It's like, okay, what client base you got? Nothing. So, okay, so you're going to arrive in my store.
Yeah.
How are you going to pay your rent on the chair? Where are you going to get your customers from? Oh, I'm going to give you these, there is a point where you've got to kind of grow up and go, I've got to build my reputation. I've got to build who I am. I mean, interesting you're saying that because, you know, I mean, Hackney, man, is like the, it's like the epicenter of brand new barbershops, isn't it? I mean, everyone I know is complaining that new shops open up. You know, my store's literally now kind of 10 yards away. A new store's just about to open. Yeah, when I opened up our 10th anniversary.
Yeah.
10 years ago, I was the only one.
Yep.
And now there's like 7 or 8 in the walk from the station to my place.
Where's yours?
I'm Battersea.
Okay, yep.
You know, Hackney even more so. I mean, it's just like,
definitely,
there's swamped, isn't it?
There's so many. Even like the road I'm on, I'm on Hackney Road, right? And I put out this talk about 2 months ago, and people who are near the area were like, you know, well, you're on a road which you've got loads of barbershops. So what do you mean go open up a shop where there's no barbershops? And I said, yeah, but when I went onto that shop, onto that road, sorry, there wasn't that many barbershops there. You know, I went on, now since I've opened up 6 years ago, a lot of shops have opened up. Because what people do, and this is why I try to teach people about business, is because a lot of people, like, I want to open up my own shop. So what they do is they go to an area where it's bubbling and it's busy and they say, yeah, great. I'm going to open up there because there's a few barbershops there already and they're busy. So this must be a good spot. And I'm just like, well, actually, why don't you go do your own research and look for an area where it could be busy, but there's no barbershops where you can fill a gap, because now you have no competition and then you'll be the first one there and you can establish yourself. And what will happen is other people will see you and be like, oh, they're quite busy, but there's only one barbershop over there. So why don't we open up a barbershop there? Because when I open up a barbershop on Hackney Road, the reason why I open up a barbershop, because I was very clear, I'm opening up a barbershop that is majority for Black people. I knew my target demographic. And it's funny because so much people are in this era where it's so kind of like, they're so kind of like, well, you know, but why is it only for Black people? I said, no, that's our target demographic because that's what we specialize in. It's like, you know, there's nothing wrong with you specializing in European hair. There's nothing wrong with you specializing in Afro hair, you know, but it's like, well, why not everybody else? I don't specialize in that.
Yeah.
you know, I specialize in Afro hair. I cut white people, I cut Asian people, you know, I do those haircuts as well, but I specialize in Afro hair. So I knew that my shop was going to be centered around that. And I looked around the area and I said, oh, in this little section, there's no black barbershops there. But across the road, there's a black community and behind there and all around, I'm like, right, so all these shops are going, are traveling, not far, because we're in Hackney anyway. It's not like they're traveling far, but you know, they're taking a bus to go and get a haircut, right? Or, you know, they're walking like a mile and a half, 2 miles. And I'm just like, this is a perfect spot to put a barbershop, right? And that means in the local community, people would be able to just walk to this barbershop, right? So I found a gap and that's where I filled it. I could have gone to Dalston where there's black barbershops every other, you know, shop, right? And be like, I'm going to fit in there. And loads of people said to me, go and open up there. That's where it's perfect. And I said, why do I want to go straight into competition with people? And you know what people responded? They said, well, you got a big brand. You'll close them down. And I said to them, why do I want to close down another shop?
Yeah.
Why do I want to do that for? I said, it's just not good. And I found this space and I said, okay, cool. This area needs a barbershop. So I looked for shops in that area. And I said, I just found a gap and I filled it, right? People are just so caught up on, I'm just going to follow the, you know, the trend and just follow where everybody else is going. And I'm just like, if I was to open up another shop now, I'll just look for an area where my target demographic is. Because I could open up another shop, which was just, let's say a white barbershop, right? And I had barbers which specialize, you know, in, when I say white, European hair, you know, and I had barbershops, barbers who would just specialize in that. And I just looked for an area probably that needed a shop more than a, more than me just being like, oh, I've got a brand. Let me just go there and go wherever I want to. I'd be like, no, let me just find an area that, you know, maybe, you know, maybe south, east, north, west. And be like, okay, you know, oh, there's bubbling community here. You know, where's the closest shop? Oh, 3 miles away. Okay, let me put a shop here. You know, because that means the people in the local area could just come there. And this is what I'm just trying to teach barbers. You know, it's not just kind of like because it's easy to open up a barbershop, many people do it. But then people don't realize that so many barbershops close down because they don't have to go through the due diligence that maybe other businesses do and jumping over the hurdles and through the hoops that other businesses do, which is a great thing in opening up a barbershop. But it means that also many people aren't ready to open up a shop. And this is why I've seen so much shops open and close very quickly because the business model is simple, but the actual the actual marketing and finding customers and all these things there are the hard thing.
But these guys are spending so much money. You see these shops opening up. You've opened up, man. Yeah, you don't do this for a few quid. Yeah, no. You're hocking up some money somewhere. You've got a bank loan. You've nabbed some money off parents. You've done something to get a chunk of change.
Yeah,
and the banks aren't throwing money at you regardless. So yeah, you're stuck with that debt, and they're opening it up thinking it's easy. Seeing, you know, like my shop where it's always busy, and there's you know, back before online booking, we'd have a queue running outside. Yeah. And they were queuing, they'd still keep queuing for us because they came to us.
Yeah.
They weren't coming because we were there and it was at the end of their road. They were coming because we did a really good job. Yeah. We had good people. We did quality. Yeah. And again, you know, they're sitting there empty, struggling because they're not thinking it through. They're not. But I feel for them. You go past these shops that you know they've spent tens of thousands of pounds setting them up without any concept of what they're going to do, how they're going, and they get drawn into and labelled as, are there money laundering fronts? And you're like, this is real? There's proper barbers in there that are having a really tough time.
Yeah.
Because they've not, you know, like you say, the kind of the diligence of working out what their business is going to be.
They haven't studied.
Who their customer is.
Who's your customer? Like, it's such a basic thing. Like, you ask people, who's your customer? And they don't know. No. And it's like, why don't you know that? You know, I want to be one of the barbershops. We cut everyone. You can be, but do you specialize in everyone?
Yeah.
So don't tell me you cut everyone. I'm like, oh, do you cut Afro hair? I'm not good at that. So you don't cut everyone. Unless you're going to find barbers where it's going to be like, okay, we've got a barber who's really good at Afro hair, European hair, this and that. If that's the case, and that is a business model, right? But just know that and know, okay, I need to find people, you know, but don't be like, you know, we cut everyone, but you know, because you can cut everyone, but it doesn't mean you cut everyone good.
Yeah.
So, you know,
and you found now, presumably, that your customers aren't all just from that kind of that community across the way.
No, you've got them
driving up, running around for a parking space, coming in a train. Yeah. You know, people will travel
We cut loads of people. We cut Asian, European, white. Listen, we cut everyone in our shop, right? Yeah. Because we have barbers that can cater to everyone. So someone will come and goes, you know, oh, I'm looking for this type of cut, this and that, you know, and I'll be like, okay, go to him because he specializes in scissor cutting.
Yeah,
you know, go to him. He specializes in patterns. You know, so we do actually cut everyone in the shop. But majority of our clients, whether it's like 80% or, you know, 85% of them are black clients. Yeah. So we are still like a black barbershop because that's, you know, majority of our clients are that. But anybody can walk in and get a haircut. And I just think it's important when you're setting up a business, still understand your demographic of people you're going to be serving. And it's not simply just race. It can be class because, you know, it could be, yeah, hair texture. It's just good to understand who you're cutting because they'll also help you with your pricing. Because there's no point of saying, what you call it, I'm going to be a high-end barbershop. Unless they not say high-end, a high-end barbershop that charges £300 a haircut, but you're in a community of working-class people because it's just not affordable.
No, I mean, that's the mindset, isn't it? I mean, like affordable. You're saying, if one of the barbers up the road from your sees you going in at 5 a.m. to open up and goes, right, I'm going to come in at 5. They're going to sit there and do nothing, aren't they?
And have no clients.
Yeah, they've got no customers. You're only going in at 5 because you've got customers.
I tell people, I don't go there if I've got no customers. It's because I've got customers, you know. And also, even like before I open up my shop, people don't realise, before I open up my shop, the things that happened that made me realise I could open up my shop, some of the basic things were, first of all, I was fully booked. But it wasn't only being fully booked. It was, I was turning away more clients than I was actually cutting. You know, I started noting down the amount of clients I was turning away. I was like, oh, I'm actually turning away more clients than I'm actually cutting. Wow. So what happened was I started passing on clients to other barbers in the shop I was working in. So there was a barber who took like, 90% of his client list was my old clients, but I was still fully booked. And then there's another barber in there where I maybe gave him like 25% of his client list, 30%. Another barber, maybe 25, 30%. Another barber, maybe 50%. And I was looking at that saying, oh, all these clients have come from me, right? But I'm still fully booked, right? And I'm still turning away clients. And then I realized, oh, as long as I recommended a barber, these clients were willing to go to them as long as I said, okay, he's good.
He's good.
So I said, okay, well, that means that if I was to open up my own shop, if I had good barbers in there, as long as I recommended them, the clients would go to them. So that was one. So I was like, okay, cool. I've done that. I trained up 2 barbers in the shop. I was like, okay, so I have the ability to train up someone. So even if I can't find any barbers to work in my shop, I work by myself, I'll get young barbers in and I'll train them up.
You know you can train them.
I know I can do that. I was managing and running the shop for about 11 years. So I had done the back end thing. So I was like, okay, cool. I know the basics of that side there, as well as a few other things, right? So me doing all these things there made me say, okay, so if I open up a barber shop, I can do these things there. And I also worked out what happens if I'm working by myself for a period of time. Can I pay the rent? Can I pay the bills and so on? You know, I worked all those things out. But what I'm finding is a lot of people are opening up barbershops and they haven't thought about any of those things there. So they just open up and they just like, it's quiet. You know, I've got people who have opened up barbershops and they're asking me, how do you get clients in? And I'm like, why did you...
Dude, you should have thought of that before you signed the lease, yeah.
I've got, this is no joke, a barber, a guy phoned me one day, right? I'm going to cut the show, he's so short, but he called me one day, it was a Saturday. I remember I was on the way to someone's 50th birthday party, right? I just remember it was about 2-3 years ago. And he's like, yo, Slider. I'm like, yo, what's going on? And, like, and I said, what's going on? He's an old client of mine, right? Not client, but he came to my shop. I said, what's going on? He goes, yo, I need some advice. I said, what's going on? He goes, yeah, I'm open up this shop. You know, I want to know, you know, what's the best way to go about it? You know, what payment plans should I do? This and that, you know, I'm taking over this shop. You know, they're already a barbershop. You know, he told me about the money they're making. I want to know. Very logical questions, right? I'm like, yeah, this all makes sense. So I'm telling him this and that. I said, yeah, so, you know, when you think about taking the shop and when you want the shop to open up, he goes, oh, you know what? The shop's opening up on Monday. And I was like, asking me these questions now. Oh, so you signed the lease. Yeah. You've got the shop. It's opening up in 2 days. You have no barbers. Why wouldn't you ask me those questions when you saw the shop? You should have been like, let me call Slider now. Yeah. So I've seen this shop. I want to know, what's the type of money? How much can I charge? What deals do I do? Ask me then. Don't sign the lease because you've been gassed up by him saying, we were making £5,000 a week or £10,000 a week and we were doing this, we were doing that. That's great. They were doing that, right? And that could have been because of the particular barbers that were in the shop.
Yeah.
You know, so he might not be lying, but it might be just because of those barbers, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but, and they're gone now. Everyone is left. You're starting again. You've just got sinks and chairs which are left there, right? But you should have asked me these questions beforehand because...
I think that's it. You need to look at it as a kind of worst case scenario rather than, I think a lot of them are opening up as kind of best case. Oh, we're going to be busy. We're going to do this. I'm going to make 1,000.
Yeah.
And I still think, I mean, with every business I've done, if I've not been able to work it out, kind of, you know, on the back of an envelope, just to kind of like, yeah, the sums make sense. You know, why would you do it?
Yeah.
But again, this comes back to where we started, that if no one's teaching that bare basics.
I'm telling them.
you know, if, you know, you pick yours up managing for somebody else where you're kind of like, yeah, that didn't work. I'll try it this way. Yeah. Oh, this works. This is a better route. That's it. And you can kind of, you know, cut your teeth on that.
Yeah. And to be clear, when I was doing this as well, managing the shop, I wasn't getting paid for it because so much people, and the reason why I say that, it's not a shot at the shop. It's not that at all. I was happy to do that, right? It's because I jumped into the job. I kind of like wasn't even assigned to the job. It was just kind of like I saw things that needed doing. So I just started doing them. So that's how it happened. It wasn't like they said, oh, be manager, we're not paying you. It was more so I just kind of like-
This needs to be done, I'll have a go.
This needs to be done, I'll just have a go at it, right? And I think it's important because people don't realize that you need to learn, but you feel like everyone should be giving you something and then they should be paying you for it as well. But there was so much value in being in that position. I learned so much from being in that position. So I learned these things and then I could go implement that at my own shop. That's why I always tell people, if you've got all these big plans in life, right? There's nothing wrong with that. So go into shops and offer your services and learn these things there. I've told people in other industries as well. I remember some guy telling me he wanted to open up a car rental company. I said, oh, okay. He goes, yeah, and I've got the money. I've got this, you know, I've rented cars so much. I think I can do it, right? And I was just like, okay, well, how about instead you go work minimum wage in a car rental company and say to them, look, I'll take minimum wage, even free if they want to, if they're willing to do it. But say, look, if they're going to work for you, just say minimum wage, I don't even want thingy, you know, and learn the ropes from them. Oh yeah, why am I doing that for, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, because you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Because you think because you've rented a car before, you know how a car rental company runs. The same way, because you think you've cut someone's hair, you know how to run a shop. Or because you've had a haircut in a barbershop, you think you know how to run a barbershop. Yeah. It's like, it's not the same.
Knowledge is power, man. And knowledge is expensive.
Yeah.
You know, and your commitment shows that it doesn't come off the hours of scrolling through other. As much as I enjoy your Instagram, yeah, mate, you know, it doesn't pay the rent to sit there and look at it too long.
No.
Man, it's been so good to meet you. Thank you so much, buddy, for coming up.
No worries,
I think we could go through more and more, and I really hope we get to do this again.
Sure, invite me.
And thank you so much, Mark. Really appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. We're always looking for interesting people and interesting stories. If you know someone or you are someone with a great story that you want to share, get in touch and come join me on the sofa. Thanks very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the episode and we'll see you next time.